It's the Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about obesity in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative has just published an interactive map that tracks obesity by zip code all over the state. What areas have more obese people than others? What causes it? And more importantly, what can we do about it? Joining us this morning in studio are Dr. Vincent Krines, an endocrinologist at UW Health and leader of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative. Dr. Krines, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hillary Joyner is an assistant researcher and surveillance coordinator for the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative. She directed this MAP project. Hillary, welcome to the Morning Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We also want to hear about you. We want to hear obesity in your area. Are you struggling with weight? Do you know people who are? 1-800-642-1234. Ideas. At WPR.org, that's our email address, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So before we talk about the map, Dr. Krines, I want to talk generally about obesity in Wisconsin. Before the release of this map, what did we know? What did we not know? What is this map telling us?
Sure. I think the map really differs from a lot of existing maps because it's a very high-resolution portrait of the obesity epidemic in the communities across our state.
Epidemic. You actually use the word epidemic. This is something that needs to be treated, and this is an emergency.
Absolutely. And it's an epidemic not only in our state, but across the country and across the globe.
And do we find out from this map that it's more urgent than we thought it was?
Well, so yes, and at first glance, the news is quite disconcerting because the overall prevalence of obesity in adults in the state, based on our direct measurement, so this is based on electronic health records as opposed to self-reported data. Mm-hmm. So this data comes from visits at the doctor's office where height and weight are directly measured. And so with that data, we find that the prevalence of obesity in adults here in the state is 41%. And if you look at self-reported data for our state from 2016, the number was more like 30.7 or 31%. That's a big gap,
right.
10%.
Because we don't think we're overweight. Or we think maybe we're mildly overweight, but we don't want to use the term obese. It's kind of a loaded term.
There's still a great deal of stigma and silence around the obesity the topic of obesity. And I think one of the sort of immediate benefits of this map is we're engaging in meaningful dialogue.
Hillary, let's talk about this map. How did the idea come about to actually map out by zip code where obese people live?
Sure. So the idea to map the data, I think, is it's kind of an epidemiological practice to try mapping things because it gives you a clearer picture that you wouldn't see from, say, like looking at the many tables of Excel, you know, Excel tables of
right.
estimates that we have,
right.
Which I love numbers and I love Excel. But, you know, you just get such a different picture when you put it on a map and you can see the variation across the state. So the idea to put it on a map is kind of a no-brainer for us to be able to get that clearer picture.
How long did it take to put this together?
Oh, it's been a very long project. So we started building the partnerships to be able to get the data about 3 years ago. Mm. And then we received the data set a little over a year ago. So it's been a long process of cleaning the data, trying to figure out exactly how to make the estimates, and then creating the maps.
You mentioned partnerships. There are a couple of spots on the map that are just blank.
Mm-hmm.
I think around Kenosha and south around Racine. You were not able to create partnerships there. How did that work, and who did you get the information from specifically?
Sure. So we work with the Wisconsin Collaborative for Healthcare Quality to get the information that we used for this project, and they work with 13 healthcare systems throughout the state. So the areas that you see that are white on our map or we don't have enough data, there are two reasons that there might be missing data there. For one reason, we don't publish estimates estimates where we don't have enough people to assure patient anonymity. So that's some. And then there are also areas in the state where we don't have partnerships yet. So especially kind of around the part of Wisconsin that's right along the Minnesota border, we think that people might be seeing patients that are based in Minnesota. Those would be providers that are either not part of the Wisconsin Collaborative for Healthcare Quality or are not currently participating in their public reporting.
Dr. Kreins, I want to talk a little more about this self-reporting versus getting the information from physicians. There are a number of reasons why people don't self-support accurately. Is it that they're afraid to? Or they just don't know what obesity is. What is the definition of obesity?
Well, I think this is not unique to obesity self-reported data, but certainly any time data is emotionally charged or there's stigma associated with, it's human nature to kind of round up on our height and round down on our weight, right? So,
why, yes, I am 6 feet tall, yes.
So, and that's why having actual measurements of height and weight are so critical.
Right. Let's define obesity, because I think there are a lot of people who think, yeah, you know, I'm a few pounds heavier than I was when I was in college, but I'm not obese. And I think that maybe in the strict definition they are. So can you define it for me?
Right. So for adults, obesity is measured by something called the body mass index, or BMI. And it basically involves height and weight. And unfortunately, it requires height and weight in the metric system, which many of us don't know. But but what is available, there are many BMI calculators. So if you have access to a computer, you can just Google BMI calculator. And by entering your height in feet and inches and weight in pounds, it will do the calculation for you. And I would encourage people to know their BMIs.
So I know people who have the same BMI level, and one of them, you look at her and she's obviously kind of soft, zaftig, I guess we could say. And the other one is an athlete and is tightly muscled, and it doesn't look like there's an extra pound on her body, but they say have the same body mass index. Why is that?
Well, first of all, I would say that BMI is a very useful indicator of certain diseases that have been linked to obesity, but it's not perfect. So by just measuring height and weight, we don't take in all the factors that someone may have more fat tissue or and less muscle. Those sorts of things aren't immediately captured in that data. So it's not a perfect measure, but it's a good first start.
So paint us a picture of overall obesity trends here in Wisconsin. About 41% of adults are obese. How much has that gone up in the last few decades?
Well, so again, we don't have the luxury of having actual electronic health record data to compare. So that's what, I mean, that's why we're talking about
you're
this,
at
right?
You're ground level now. You're starting that base level.
Exactly.
Right now.
So to compare it with prior self-reported data is not very accurate. But we do have some comparison with SHOW data that maybe Hillary would like to talk about.
Yeah,
sure. So SHOW has only, or the Survey of the Health of Wisconsin is SHOW.
Thank you very much.
Always have to define the acronyms. We have tons of acronyms. So SHOW has been around since 2008, and they are a statewide survey that goes out and measures height and weight and a bunch of other health indicators from people throughout the state to create statewide estimates. So what we did was we took the statewide numbers that we came up with for adults and compared them to the estimates that SHOW created to see if we were kind of getting close to the ballpark of what they found when they actually went and measured people's heights and weights. And we did find that for our estimates and the estimates that they made for the same or a similar time period, we are getting pretty close to their estimates based on measured height and weight. And as Vince said earlier, it's higher than the self-reported height and weight from other sources, or sorry, self-reported BMI from other sources.
You know, I think anecdotally, as we have all grown up, we've seen that we are a fatter society. We are bigger people than we were, I think, when we were little. But is that, what are the reasons for that? Are we eating more? Are we taking care of ourselves less? And how does this break down in terms of, are there more children that are obese now than before?
Sure. So when we define obesity for children, the definition is a little bit different than how we define obesity for adults. And so just based on the way that we define obesity for children, we would expect an obesity prevalence of about 5%. And that those definitions are based on kind of what we saw in the rates of obesity among kids in more like the 70s and 80s.
Right. And now the number is?
Now the number that we came up with for kids 2 to 17 is 15%.
Okay, we're going to dig into that in a moment. UW researchers are in studio. They put together an interactive map tracking obesity in the state. We are The Morning Show. We'll be back in a moment.
PR News in Washington. I'm Dave Mattingly. The race for governor of California is now set. Democrat Gavin Newsom and Republican John Cox were the top vote-getters in yesterday's gubernatorial primary. In Alabama, Republican Governor Kay Ivey will face the Democratic mayor of Tuscaloosa in November. In New Jersey, pharmaceutical executive Bob Huggin is the winner of that state's Republican Senate primary.
New Jersey deserves a senator as good as its people. Not one whose greatest accomplishment is staying one step ahead of the law.
Huggin will face incumbent Democratic Senator Bob Menendez in November. Menendez is seeking his third term. His federal corruption trial last year ended in a mistrial. In Virginia, a member of the National Guard is under arrest after an armored personnel carrier was stolen from Fort Pickett. Craig Carper with member station WCVE says the military vehicle was driven 60 miles before a chase ended in downtown Richmond.
The suspect is now in state police custody after stopping on his own accord. Police tased him after he failed to comply with numerous orders. No one has been reported injured in the incident. Police say the suspect was taken to VCU Medical Center to be evaluated as a precaution.
At one point, state police say that chase moved onto Interstate 95. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio News at 720. I'm Hope Kerwin. A map produced by the University of Wisconsin-Madison researchers show 41% of residents are considered obese, but it varies greatly, reaching over 60% in some zip codes. The map is the first to narrow in on zip code level data. Hillary Joyner is with the Obesity Prevention Initiative. She says weight can be a sensitive topic, and they're not trying to fat shame residents in any one zip code.
To really make strides for health improvement in this area, we need to talk about weight in a more positive light, and we need to be thinking about ways that we can make physical activity and healthy eating more fun and more accessible for more people.
Childhood obesity rates in the state were lower than those of adults, standing at nearly 15%. The new home of the Milwaukee Bucks won't offer plastic straws at events. Officials also said yesterday that the new Wisconsin Entertainment and Sports Center will use compostable food packaging as part of its sustainability program. The center's general manager, Raj Saha, said the arena is committed to protecting the environment. Saha says the arena's full sustainability plan will be unveiled as opening day approaches. The $524 million arena is nearing completion in downtown Milwaukee. The venue is expected to open this fall. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. I spent my evening yesterday happily clicking on a map of Wisconsin, trying to figure out obesity rates in the state. This is made possible by the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative, which tracks obesity rates reported by doctors by zip codes. We are joined by two guests from that initiative, and we're taking your call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, and we've got a couple of emails in already at ideas@wpr.org. tweet us at WPR Mornings. So Hillary Joyner, we ended this talking about the obesity rates for children, which are 15% in Wisconsin, and in the 70s, they were about 5%. Are kids just eating too much McDonald's?
There are a lot of different reasons that we see higher rates of obesity now in children and adults. So I don't think that there's one specific thing you can point to. There's certainly a lot of factors, including the nutrition that kids are getting and how that's changed, the amount of physical activity that kids are getting, and a host of other factors. So unfortunately, there's not one thing that we can point to.
Are you looking at whether or not kids have PE in schools and correlating that to their obesity?
So we are not currently looking at that. We do have another project through the Wisconsin Health Atlas where we're looking at school wellness policies to see how those policies shape the environments in schools. And that project does include looking at nutrition in school cafeterias and physical activity.
And how do we compare to other states?
So when you look overall at the obesity prevalence for statewide for different states for adults, Wisconsin is kind of right in the middle.
Okay. But within Wisconsin, there's this variation. I mean, there are some zip codes where the obesity rate is about 16%, and some zip codes where it's 67%. Tell me about those zip codes right now.
Right, and that gets back to your previous point about looking at the whole state versus looking at the zip codes. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, one of the really cool and important things of doing the maps and looking at the sub-state data. So when we look at the obesity rates by zip code, we can see that there's a ton of variation throughout the state. And for adults, we know that the obesity rates by zip code vary from 15.9% at the low end to 67.2% at the high end, which means that there's a fourfold difference in obesity rates between the zip codes that have the highest rates and those that have the lowest rates.
What do the highest rates have in common?
Oh, that's a really good question. So, when we look at the maps, we can see that the higher rates kind of fall generally in rural areas, and that there's also a lot of variation within urban areas, too. So we haven't gotten to those analyses yet, but kind of a high-level picture that we're getting so far is that, on average, the obesity rates are higher in rural areas, and there's also a lot of variation within cities.
Are people in those rural areas, do they tend to be older? Does it tend to cross all ages? Do they tend to be economically the same, diverse? Do you know this yet?
So we still have a little bit more work to do to actually run all of the analyses to say for sure. But we know from other literature, like when we look at the urban and regional planning type of literature, they do find that generally in rural areas, people tend to be a little bit older. They might have a little bit less education. And those things are related to having higher obesity rates. Mm-hmm. And we also know from that urban and regional planning field that there are differences in the opportunities that people have to be physically active and to have access to healthy foods. So in rural areas, people might be spending more time in cars, getting from place to place. Mm. They might not have as many opportunities to buy healthy food that's easily accessible and quick for them to get. And there are a host of other reasons.
So even in America's breadbasket, there are food deserts?
I can't speak to that directly, but
it would seem to, the rural areas tend to be farming areas. But have we created something with our systems of farming that makes getting to food a barrier for some people there, Doctor?
Well, again, our data doesn't specifically examine that at this point. Those are things that we're going to look to in the future. But what it strongly suggests, as Hillary was saying, is that the access to safe, healthy food varies, we know, throughout the state, and that's likely to be a major contributor to some of the findings that we're seeing. And so we can't really overemphasize that one of the take-home messages is where we live profoundly influences our risk for developing obesity. So in a sense, it's giving further support for this sort of paradigm shift where we don't think that the obesity epidemic is going to be solved in the doctor's office. I'm a physician, so I can say that. And focusing exclusively on personal choice and individual behaviors. The solutions are going to require us to make our communities healthier, reducing barriers to physical activity, making, you know, access to healthy food easier and fun.
Right.
And affordable.
William in Toma emailed us. William said, some people have said that the origin of the obesity diabetes epidemic may lie with the dietary guidelines for Americans published by the federal government for the past 35 years. The guidelines recommend a diet high in carbohydrates and low in fat, whereas many now believe that the best diet to prevent or reverse obesity and diabetes is a low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet. Can you comment on that, Dr. Crimes?
Well, I think, you know, to go into all of the various diets and things, we would exhaust.
Right. That would be another two shows.
Yes. But I think, you know, what has emerged and sort of what I do in my spare time actually is develop novel dietary interventions that have metabolic benefits and anti-cancer effects. So there are a lot of things out there, but certainly focusing on plant-based foods is a major advantage. But ultimately it's about physical activity and how many calories you take in.
Hillary, Joe in Verona asked whether obesity increases with age. And is that, if the answer is yes, my question is that a natural component of aging, or is it because we're busy and we just kind of slow down as we get older?
Sure. So just to be clear, we are only looking at one time period, so we don't have trend data yet. Mm-hmm. So when we look across the population that we have in our data for this year, we can see that there are higher rates of obesity in older age groups. So the lowest rates are in 2 to 5 year olds, and then it kind of is leveling off around middle age. So you can see that there's this kind of pattern of weight gain over a lifetime. And I think that is kind of, it mirrors what we know about weight gain over time. So I think Vince could probably speak better to the metabolic changes that you see over a lifetime.
Yeah. Vince, want to talk about that?
Yes. So it reflects pretty closely with the kind of data that we're getting here. But what happens over time as people carry this weight, and a large portion of that is fat mass, and that fat is actually very metabolically active. And so it does more than just store energy. But it also, over time, it causes our pancreases to work overtime to make insulin. And we become resistant to its actions. And it's thought that that insulin resistance ultimately drives a lot of the things that we see that the deadly kind of complications of obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, strokes, even certain types of cancer. These are all fueled by the decades of obesity.
So what a lot of doctors, I think, are afraid to talk to patients about their body mass index because they don't want to be seen as fat shaming. And I've seen this on social media. Yeah, my doctor just told me that I was fat. And people are pissed off. But there are specific implications. Obesity is not it just doesn't live isolated. If you have a body mass index that is higher, it can make you sick in a number of ways, which in turn can slow you down and make you more obese. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. So I would hope that doctors wouldn't be telling their patients that they were fat.
Yeah, I know. Right? That's the.
But they're often
not. What language
not
do we use? That is the question.
Right. So I think by using body mass index, this BMI number, that I would encourage everyone to really figure out what their BMI is. You can go online if you have access to a computer for a BMI calculator and enter your weight in pounds and height in feet and inches, and it will calculate your BMI, your body mass index. And so I think we can get away from some of those pejorative or fat-shaming terms
I honestly think that when I see stuff on social media, the doctor has probably said, your body mass index is a little high, and people have come away with, my doctor just called me fat. I'm not really sure that doctors are necessarily saying that,
yeah.
But that's what we're hearing.
But it's also empty words if it's not accompanied by specific recommendations. And I think that's where some of the challenge in the doctor's office is. This is not a conversation that you can have in the last minute of a patient-doctor appointment.
We're going to go to John in Madison. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions for you. There's an obesity epidemic with kids, too, not as severe as the adults, but it's there. And I was wondering how you feel about limiting food advertising to kids, say, up to the age of 6 because of their increased susceptibility. They believe everything. And my second question is, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was in the New York Times, there was a linkage between the antibiotics that farmers feed their animals, cows, pigs, and chickens, to speed up their maturation and fattening. And there was a suggestion that because humans are absorbing this, that it's doing the same thing in humans. And I wondered if you could comment on both of those.
So let's talk about the antibiotics first. Antibiotics in animals, there's been a lot of talk about that over the last couple of decades. It's been correlated that some girls are starting puberty earlier, and some people are blaming that. Does it have anything to do with obesity?
Well, I would have to say to the listener, I don't know that specific study he was referring to. That was apparently discussed in the New York Times. But certainly there are a lot of reasons that having antibiotics in things that we eat would be harmful for us. But I can't comment directly on the links with obesity because I'm not aware of that study.
And I want to pair John's comment about kids. We also have somebody who emailed Gail in Waseca, called to say that kids are too sedentary. They don't get enough in the way of exercise, and parents aren't helping the situation. We need to do better. We need to get them active. So we need to stop. I think his comment about advertising food to kids is a pretty good one. We need to get them stop maybe watching those advertisements on their devices and getting up and doing things. What's the feedback when you say to a child or mother of a child, this is what your child needs to do? What's the feedback that you get?
Well, I'm not getting that feedback because I'm an adult endocrinologist and all
okay,
of my
fine.
Patients are over 18. So hopefully, I know that from my own visits with my children that we do hear those comments about how much screen time. We've specifically been asked, how much screen time does your child have on a given, you know, per day, roughly? So I think pediatricians are tuned into this. And I don't know what those numbers are, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're quite shocking.
In terms of the number
of hours that many of our kids are, instead of going out and playing tennis and shooting baskets, they're doing video games in the basement, playing
yes.
video games, right?
Shooting baskets on their devices.
On their yeah, devices, right. Yes.
Hillary, are we talking about, when we're talking about obesity rates being higher in rural areas than they are in some urban areas, are we talking numbers or percentages?
So we're talking about percentages.
Okay.
So we're comparing the obesity rates in the urban and rural areas.
So there are likely more people who are obese in Milwaukee or in Madison than in some rural area, but the percentage of people in that rural area is higher than it is here in Madison.
So I haven't actually done those calculations,
okay.
but I think that is likely just based on the numbers of people that are living in urban versus rural areas.
And is it all over the state? I mean, you know, is it in the northern part of the state? Is it a different set of numbers you're seeing than maybe in the southeast part of the state? Or just rural areas altogether tend to be more obese.
So again, we haven't been able to do those analyses yet, but that's kind of on our docket to look at those more, look more closely at the regional variations.
And in within urban areas, there are food deserts here in Madison and Milwaukee. You, Are you finding within the zip codes within the urban areas, are you finding that there is a variation of obesity rates there?
We do see variation of obesity rates within urban areas. So if you go to our website, wihealthatlas.org, and look at the maps, you can kind of zoom in on different areas. So if you look at, say, Madison or Milwaukee, you'll see that there's a lot of variation within the urban areas. And there are even places where neighboring zip codes might have a twofold difference in obesity rates. Mm.
And you're still figuring out why. The next step is to dig into those zip codes and find what, more than body mass index? Find other factors? Talk to me about that.
Sure. There are a bunch of different directions that we want to expand this. So as you mentioned, we're interested in expanding to other health indicators like cancer or heart disease or diabetes, so we can kind of get more towards the health outcomes that are associated with obesity. We're also interested in doing overlaying some more information like with food deserts or with other kind of demographic information, or to look at poverty to get a clearer picture of the contexts that are creating the places where people live, work, and play, and that are really impacting their ability to maintain a healthy weight.
We'll also get updated information. So this is not a one-time map.
Ah, right.
It will be updated in the future, and that will be particularly powerful for communities to then look to see, oh, we put these programs in place. Did they have an impact?
Are communities responding to this? I know that you just put this out this week, but are we looking for communities to respond in terms of a person-to-person level, or is there something that government can do to help people be less obese, be more healthy?
Well, I would say yes, hopefully to both, because we think that this is a resource, this map, which is searchable, and as I said, is dynamic, so it will be updated in time. We're hoping that people are going to use this information. And by people, I mean communities, healthcare providers, policymakers, so that both at the local level, this information is useful, but also for people who are looking at state level or county level, that this kind of data can be empowering to really guide strategies to make our communities healthier.
We are talking about obesity in Wisconsin. There's a handy-dandy map that tells you obesity levels by percentage all over the state by zip code. We are also taking your calls. It's The Morning Show. We'll be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about obesity in Wisconsin. A new interactive map by the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative shows rates of obesity by zip code. We want to hear from you, 1-800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We've got a few calls here. First of all, I do want to ask you, Hillary, one of the things in your report says that rural areas, which have high rates of obesity, are actually uniquely situated to solve this problem. How is that?
Sure. So rural areas have a lot of strengths that they can draw on to find unique solutions to the obesity problem. So there are great, beautiful natural areas throughout Wisconsin where give people places to be physically active. There are tight-knit communities around the state that really care about each other and are already working together to find solutions to obesity. And I think this really highlights an important point that the solutions to obesity are diverse and they need to be tailored to local areas. So what works in a rural area might not work in an urban area, mm-hmm. and vice versa. I think it's a great opportunity to find solutions that work for your area.
Christine from Eau Claire, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciated the brief comment about context in terms of obesity. I think that food insecurity is a huge issue that needs to be discussed. Additionally, school lunches. When I was growing up, we had homemade bread every day, and we had real food for school lunches. I've seen school lunches that have been served on styrofoam with plastic forks. Peanut butter and jelly comes out of a package. There's deep fried French toast sticks. It's the school lunch, whatever relationship the school has to the USDA, and free and reduced lunch, however that works. It's not about serving good.
Okay, you're breaking up there, Christine, but I think it, your point is it's not about serving kids good, healthy food. Are you going to be looking at school lunches and what we are feeding kids?
So we don't look at the nutritional content of school lunches. We've done more work looking at the policies that kind of govern nutrition in schools. Mm-hmm. But I can say that it's really important to make sure that school meals include nutritious foods that are appropriate to the age range that the children are when they're getting this food at school.
This is what Michelle Obama was talking about. Eat healthy in school. Eat healthy. Trying to get kids to think about this. Paula from La Crosse has been holding for a while. Thank you, Paula. What is your question?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've been a registered dietitian for over 30 years, and I just wanted to comment. I think it was just talked about a couple calls ago, the screen time. And I know it's been well documented that, you know, increased screen time is hugely a factor in this obesity epidemic, and not just TVs. So it's phones, and it's a whole vicious cycle because parents are doing it, kids see their parents doing it. There's a great pediatric program that talks about decreasing screen time and increasing fruits and vegetables, and the previous caller with real food. I guess those two factors I've seen in my practice as being a major factor.
Thank you very much. Screen time, are you looking at that? You're looking at causes of obesity, and that may be one of them.
So we, again, haven't looked at screen time yet, but I think screen time and, by extension, sedentary time or time that you're spending sitting is really important when we're talking about obesity prevention. So looking at not just screen time, but time that you're spending sitting in a car or sitting at work, too.
So, the second part of that call, the fruits and vegetables are critical. So as part of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative, we have through Health Tide, we call Health Tide, which is basically a statewide network of community partners. We've partnered with a national campaign called FNV, which is fruits and veggies. And often they partner with sports celebrities, again, to try to change thinking about fruits and vegetables, making them, you know, much more attractive to as healthy food options for kids.
You know, we had a discussion in our office about when we peel the orange and put it in a bowl, when we take out the carrots and just kind of put them there, or the strawberries or whatever, people eat them, not just kids, but adults. But if we leave them in our refrigerator, then we tend to forget to eat them. So that's one thing that we decided that we were going to do in our office. I don't think we've done it since we had that discussion, though. Kathy from Fremont, welcome to the program.
Hi. So as an undergraduate at UW Oshkosh, in my health psychology class, we did see a correlation between the onslaught of gaming and the increased obesity rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just there. It was black and white. You could just see it and across the country. So I found that very interesting, and, you know, I know that you personally don't have that information for your study, but that was in a textbook.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to dig into these numbers. You could be doing this. You are going to be doing this, I'm assuming, for a number of years now. What is the next step? What is the next thing you want to figure out now that you have these numbers?
So, there are so many things. Now that we have it and we've made it public, it's like trying to think of all of the things that I would like to do next and prioritize them is my current struggle. I think we're currently working on getting the second year of data. So to really dig into that and see how we can make sure that we're creating estimates that could be used to track change over time, as Vince mentioned earlier, so that obesity prevention champions throughout the state who are doing obesity work in their local area can really see the impacts that they're having over time. So that's a big one. We'd also like to expand the kind of layers that you could put on the map over the obesity rates to include things like food deserts. We would love to include other health topics, as I said earlier, like diabetes. So there are a lot of possibilities.
You were just listening to Hillary Joyner. She's an assistant researcher and surveillance coordinator at the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative. She directed the project that resulted in these really cool interactive maps that track obesity by zip code, and you can find those maps at the morning show at WPR.org. Dr. Vincent Krines also joined us. He's an endocrinologist at UW Health and leader of the Wisconsin Obesity Prevention Initiative. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Years ago, Wisconsin Democrats nominated former Trek executive Mary Burke to be their quote-unquote political outsider candidate in the race for governor. This year, Milwaukee businessman Andy Gronick fits that bill. But will Gronick's message be similar? His story is anything but simple. In our ongoing series on the governor's race, Sean Johnson has this profile.
Some campaigns look a little rough around the edges when they launch. Andy Gronick's already looked polished. The Milwaukee businessman's first web ad was a short film, beginning with Gronick pulling up a seat at a donut shop, speaking directly to the camera.
Business has always made sense to me. You have a bottom line. You treat your employees like family. You work together to get things done, or you don't succeed. It's pretty simple.
The 6-minute ad included voters' stories about healthcare and schools. It called for a government that unites people. It featured Gronick's kids. What it didn't offer was many specifics about Gronick's experience in business. If you ask him about it, Gronick will say the story starts when he was a kid working for his dad's auction business. He'd sweep floors and clean machinery at manufacturing plants.
I had grown up climbing on machinery, literally degreasing it so that it could be sold.
After business school, Andy Gronick says he wanted to expand his dad's company. Gronick offered to buy it. His dad didn't like that and fired him.
My dad fired me pretty much every month. The things that I was suggesting and doing to grow the business were very different than how he had made a living his whole life.
The auction business depended on being good at understanding what things were worth. Andy Gronick used that knowledge to form an appraisal business in a financial field known as asset-based lending. Asset-based lending involves riskier companies that want to borrow money, but they're not earning enough to get a loan from traditional banks. Gronick would go into those companies and learn everything about them. He'd share that information with lenders like Richard Solar, who was working at Bankers Trust when he met Gronick in the early 80s.
Turned out that Andy did a lot more than just tell you what the value of the assets were. He really got behind the scenes and got to understand the companies.
Solar says Gronick was credible and candid.
Even though I might press him, if I wanted to do a deal, I would press him for a certain answer. He would not give me necessarily the answer that I wanted. He would give me what he believed. He would really be very straight with me.
This is Andy Gronick's first run for office, but the political path he's traveling is well-worn. The question is how Democratic voters feel about a business candidate when they have other options, especially with Republican businessman Donald Trump in the White House. Nathan Gonzalez is the editor of Inside Elections, which analyzes campaigns around the country.
Democrats are in the middle of trying to decide whether they want to find outsider candidates of their own or move in a completely opposite direction as a reaction to President Trump and how he's performed in office.
Complicating that decision is the way Andy Gronick's business career ended. When his family moved into a mold-infested house, it made them sick and brought his Crohn's disease out of remission. Gronick sued.
And we fought what we thought was something that was very wrong for over 5 years. and I was not willing to stand down.
While recovering and pursuing the legal fight, Gronick stopped going to work. His ex-business partner sued him, and Gronick eventually sold his share of the business. But Gronick says he emerged from the difficult process with a new perspective and new circumstances. He thought about running for office when he was younger, but never had the time. With his business career now behind him, Gronick could finally try politics. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
We continue our coverage of the 2018 governor's race tomorrow at this time. Complete coverage of the race is online at WPR.org. There you can also find out about WPR's election year project, Beyond the Ballot. Will you be voting? What's the biggest issue in your community? Share your story at WPR.org/ballot. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.